B-Pod Studios.
Today on Talkin' Rock with Meltdown.
And there's a lot of talk at Rock to get to today. We'll start it off with Derek Whibley from Sum 41. Lots of things happening around this band, starting up their fall tour. Order of Decline is the brand new record. We talk about that, talk about playing Chuck in its entirety, as well as Derek's recognizability. Does he ever get recognized by other rock stars?
That happened with Sting once, which I was not expecting.
Really?
I still to this day assume Sting thought I was somebody else, but he did say hi to me.
Since he is so recognizable and fairly young, he spent half of his life in the limelight. What's that like?
I don't know. I just sort of do my thing, and I enjoy my life, and everything's always been good, even the down periods. You know, there's always ups and downs, but
we talk about his health and sobriety, as well as the fact that he grew up without a father. How did that affect him?
All I know is that growing up without a father created such a great relationship with my mom.
Up next, it's Scott Gorham from Thin Lizzy and Black Star Riders. He joins me and talks about many things, including the challenges of starting a brand new band.
Honestly, God, I didn't really know what to expect. I knew this was not going to be an easy road.
We talk about the brand new record, brand new members in the band Black Star Riders, as well as some dates with Thin Lizzy this year and some special guests who joined them on stage.
And the guys who came up on stage with us were great. It's Scott Travis from Judas Priest on drums and Troy Sanders from Mastodon on bass. And it was kicking.
He tells me about his start way back in the 70s when he went over to England for 6 months to kind of try and join his brother-in-law's band. Kind of, sort of. He's kind of glad it didn't work out in the end.
And the songwriting and all that, and all the success they had, it really was not a guitar band.
It's Sum 41's Derek Whibley and guitarist Scott Gorham from Thin Lizzy and Black Star Riders today on Talkin' Rock.
This is Talkin' Rock. Talkin' Rock. Your backstage pass to some of your favorite rock artists. Here's your host, Meltdown.
Hey, thanks so much for checking out the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. I'm Meltdown. Al Beck is with me. Of course, the purveyor of rock news.
Purveyor. I'm a purveyor of so little. Of pizza, maybe. Purveyor of pizza
that
and
is
Star
true.
Trek.
Yeah, so, well, let's not get carried away here. And I don't want to hear any more about your Star Trek or your Star Wars. Or
every chance I get.
Anything. Anyway, yeah, you're on Nerd Radio, by
that's
the
right.
way. We
yeah.
give a plug for Nerd Radio.
Yeah, you can check that out with myself, James from Dave and Chuck the Freak, and our buddy Chuck Bean. Talking
you
nerd
should be
stuff.
Plugging this friggin' podcast while you're on Nerd Radio.
I'll take it into consideration.
All right, there you go.
Let's so see if your check clears.
He's got he's got rock news coming up here for you in just a little bit. And today we're going to talk about we got a lot of Soundgarden news for some reason, eh?
Yeah, we got a whole like three stories we're going to talk Soundgarden related.
Okay, and then a classic album turns 50, and it's getting the big old redo. As a matter of fact, that's happening today as we're recording this. So we'll talk about that coming up here in just a few. And Foo Fighters joined on stage by a special guest. Like, they've had special guests in the past.
Yeah, they've had a few, but this is kind of a cool one because of who it is and the connection, so that'd be something worth checking out.
Yes, so we got some audio we'll play from that coming up here in just a bit. Hey, up second, it's Scott Gorham. He's from Thin Lizzy, of course, and then Black Star Riders. Black Star Riders just put out their fourth record, and you know, it was one of those things where Scott was moving along playing with Thin Lizzy, and then, like, do you put out a record and call it Thin Lizzy, or do you put out a record and just, you know, completely change everything around? So they changed everything around, and now the band is actually they're a real band. Christian Martucci, by the way, from Stone Sour is now in the band. Damon Johnson left the band but still playing with Thin Lizzy here and there, and so Christian's in the band, and it's just it's really cool. It's got this really cool Irish vibe as well. But up first, Sum 41's Derek Whibley. Are you a Sum fan?
I like Sum 41. They were a band I didn't appreciate at the time, like them, Blink 182.
Yeah, it's all, you know? it's very in the same vein.
The same vein. And I remember, like, this was like around me in middle school, high school age. And I didn't appreciate them at the time. But now I get a lot of nostalgia when I listen to them, and I love them now. It puts me right back in that age that I couldn't wait to get out of at the time, obviously.
Well, what year were you born?
I was born 86.
Okay, so yeah, Derek's got you by about 6 years. So yeah, so when you were growing up in, you know, high school and stuff.
Yeah,
they started to pop. So yeah. So anyways, I've never talked to Derek before. Seemed like a pretty good guy. So yeah, give this a listen. It's Derek today as he starts out the Talkin' Rock with Meltdown podcast. Thanks so much for checking it out. Hey, Derek, how's things, man?
Hey, pretty good. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I see you're playing. You're playing Louder Than Life this weekend, eh?
Yeah, we are.
Yeah, that's
first show of the tour.
Yeah, that's a cool festival gig. I was down there a few years ago, and of course, you guys are playing what on Sunday night?
Yeah.
So, are you going to do like the whole stage set, or is this or on these festival dates? You just kind of got to pare it down a little bit.
The festival stuff is a lot shorter of a set, so yeah, we're going to pare it down quite a bit probably because the set that we're going to be doing on the headline tour is about 2 hours.
Yeah, so explain that to everybody because this is quite an undertaking you guys are going to be bringing to the States here.
Yeah, well, I mean, we have a new record called Order and Decline that's out now, and so we're obviously going on tour for that, but it also happens to be the 15th anniversary of our Chuck album, so we want to celebrate that as well. So we're combining that plus a bunch of, like, fan favorites from the other records that people want to hear as well. So we're putting all these songs together and making one giant set list, and we're going to celebrate the whole thing.
Now, you guys have been obviously, I guess, rehearsing and preparing for this, and some of the songs you probably haven't played in a long time, and some I'm thinking you've probably never played live on stage, right?
You're exactly right. Yeah, there's like a lot of songs from Chuck that we actually never even got around to that we haven't even played since we were in the studio. So they're kind of like new songs as well as the other new songs from Order and Decline. So, yeah, we're in Nashville right now, and we came here to rehearse for a week away from our homes, so there's no distractions, nothing, and we're just rehearsing all day, every day, till we start up on Sunday.
Yeah, now, these festival dates have got to be pretty cool. I mean, you've probably met some of your heroes at some of these stops, right?
Oh, yeah, all the time. Yeah, unfortunately, I guess we're missing somebody, and I can't remember who it is, but, yeah, I mean, you do. Sometimes you get on these festivals and it's your favorite band that you were growing up with. And sometimes you don't know anybody, but it's sort of the luck of the draw, I guess.
Now, you're pretty recognizable and you're kind of like the face of the band. So do some of these guys that you grew up idolizing recognize you when you meet them? Or?
Yeah, sometimes. It's funny because I never really expect it. But sometimes, yeah, somebody I'm least expecting, like, is way older than me will come up and say something to me or, give me a nod or a wave or something that I'm not expecting. That happened with Sting once, which I was not expecting.
Really?
I still to this day assume Sting thought I was somebody else, but he did say hi to me.
I remember one time Roger Penske. Do you know who that is?
I don't know.
He owns he owns a bunch of racing teams, and he like owns that Penske hauling and stuff. And he came over and shook my hand and thanked me a few times. I'm thinking to myself, he must think I'm delivering pizza or something. I don't know if he knows who I am,
yeah.
but it was kind of neat. So what's it? Did you get the chance to meet Sting?
No, he just kind of walked by and he goes, "Oh, hey, how's it going?" And then just kept walking, and I don't know. Wow, that's pretty cool. Or he just has no idea. Or he thinks of somebody else. I don't know.
So I mentioned a few minutes ago that, like, you're kind of the face of the band. I mean, was this something when you guys first kind of started out that you kind of took on, or is this something that you kind of grew into?
No, it just sort of whatever happens. I don't know. I think I just have a weird face, and it sticks out, I guess. I don't know.
That wasn't what I was getting at.
Well, I think that's probably the correct answer, though.
Yeah, there you go. So, I mean, as far as writing and recording and stuff, though, are you pretty much the main songwriter and the main lyricist and everything for this band?
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of how it's always kind of been. I guess, we all sort of had our things, I guess, I'm probably like the worst musician in the band, and I'm not very funny or very talkative either. I'm just more about the music, and everyone has their sort of thing, I guess.
So when I found out I was going to talk to you, I kind of looked you up a little bit because I wasn't, I'd never met you or interviewed you before, but you were born in 1980 and your band was signed in 1999. Is that right?
Yep.
So 20 That's years right. now you've been in this business, so half your life. So what is it like living in the spotlight for your whole like adult life? You've had some, obviously some high profile romances and different things like that. What's that like?
It's all pretty cool. I don't know because I don't really think about it. I guess it's only when somebody like you says that that it's been 20 years. I don't know. I just sort of do my thing, and I enjoy my life, and everything's always been good, even the down periods. You know, there's always ups and downs, but I sort of just kind of enjoy everything I'm doing. I don't know.
Now, you grew up in a city like north of Toronto. Is that correct?
I grew up all around. I was born in the city, moved out of the country, came back, went to just outside of the city, then back in the city.
And what kind of stuff were you influenced by growing up in Canada as far as music's concerned?
I don't know. It's just sort of like, it's probably typical of the times, you know, when I was sort of late 80s, getting into my own music, a lot of the stuff that I was finding was what would be now considered old school rap. And then as I hit like 10, 11, I was into Nirvana. You know, Nirvana was coming out in 91, so I was 11. There's also Guns N' Roses. Those were probably the two biggest rock bands for me around 10, 11. And then it kind of went into punk rock from high school on.
Yeah, and obviously you can hear all those influences in your music then, which is no surprise.
Yeah, I mean, we were always fans of certain metal, too. I mean, we're not just all of it, but I was such a fan of Metallica, Maiden, Slayer, Priest. And then Dave, he was way deeper into a lot of different kind of metal, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's I've been in this business for 30 years, and I was fortunate to see some of these bands. As a matter of fact, I just posted a thing today about the Guns N' Roses Metallica tour on my blog, and it's like one of the greatest shows I've ever seen. I mean, in 1992, when both those bands were in their prime, and you were just 12 years old, you know?
I was 12, I know. I wanted to go to that so bad. I remember that tour, and I was in the parking lot in Toronto when I heard the tour. Like, it was at the stadium, I could hear the tour, like the show start up, and I just begged my parents if we could just sit in the parking lot and just listen, and obviously they said no way, and we just drove away as I could hear my favorite bands starting to play up.
Oh man, so you wanted to be a musician early on in your life then?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, what was that turning point?
I don't know what the turning point was. I think I first started getting into playing like a keyboard. I had like a cheap Casio keyboard that I got for Christmas, and I sort of figured my way around that. And then as I was into so many rock bands, I gravitated towards wanting to play guitar. Then my uncle just bought me a guitar for Christmas, and you know, another cheap little guitar that I sort of kind of figured out a few chords on, and it's progressed from there.
Now, this new record, Order of Decline, that came out this past summer. So tell us about this record. I kind of read up on it a little bit, but what do you want fans to take away from this record when they listen to it?
I think it's a pretty aggressive, fun, intense. It's probably our heaviest record. I'm not going to say it's like a metal record in any way, because I feel like it still sounds like Sum 41, but it's probably the heaviest thing we've done. But there's a couple of slow songs on there that to me are my favorite songs that I think I've written. I don't know. I'm really excited about this record. I feel like it's impossible for me to say whether it's good or great or whatever, but for me, I'm probably more proud of this record than the other records in the past. I feel like I'm really happy with this one. I think it turned out great.
Now, you say heavier and also a little bit maybe heavier in content. That song, Catching Fire, caught my ear right away. And, of course, you just mentioned your mom and dad and stuff. Talk a little bit about that song.
Catching Fire, that one, a lot of these songs have a couple different meanings within them because I start them as one thing, they turn into others, and I have different thoughts throughout them, and they sort of change shape. But, I mean, there's two slow songs on the record. One called Never There, which is more about my family. And that song is about how I've just never met my father. And
okay,
I realized
that,
one
that,
day.
Okay, yeah, I got you. Yeah, go ahead. Okay.
Yeah, so Never There is a song about how I've never met my father. And I've never really written about it. I mean, I have a little bit, but not to this extent. But the only reason that I kind of went there this time was I realized something for the first time, that this bond in a way that I share with somebody I've never met is the fact that we have this missing piece together. And I don't share that with anybody else in my family, obviously. So once I realized that, it sort of just opened up this new way of writing about that situation, you know, that I just never thought of before.
Yeah, so growing up, you know, not knowing your dad and stuff, do you, how did that influence you or maybe light a fire under you to succeed?
You know, I'm not really one for looking back and figuring out why things have happened or I've turned out a certain way or how things have affected me. All I know is that growing up without a father created such a great relationship with my mom and I.
Oh, yeah.
And my mom was so tough and she was so strong that I always just felt like I never missed my father. I never really needed him. We were such a team, my mom and I, and still are. And which is probably why I never really felt like I needed to write about the situation before until now. And like I said, the only reason I wrote about it is because I found this sort of unique way of looking at it that, you know, him and I share something that I never realized before, this missing piece.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. Yeah, I know my mom passed away many, many years ago, and you do kind of become a little bit, you know, closer to your parent, you know, the other parent or whatever, like you say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, so I know that, you know, you had a health scare a couple years ago. How's your health and stuff nowadays?
Health-wise, everything feels great. You know, it's been about 5.5 years since I got out of the hospital, and I don't really think about it anymore. You know, I just sort of live my life, and everything feels great. I feel like I'm a pretty healthy person, you know, since then. I don't know, I feel good. The only things I go through now are just sort of like physical injuries and stuff from performing all the time. And, you know, that could be better, but that is what it is. I think that's just sort of how it goes.
Well, I hate to tell you, but you're not getting any younger and it probably will just get worse.
Yeah, I know. That's what they tell me.
What kind of physical stuff do you suffer while on stage?
Well, I've had a herniated disc in my back for years, and
right.
That is kind of difficult. But when that is not bad, I mean, my feet are pretty messed up, especially right now. I have this thing, it's called like plantar fasciitis or whatever. I don't really know what it's something, it's kind of like a common injury in basketball players, I guess. But it kind of messes up your feet quite a bit, I'm realizing.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you get out on stage, you don't ever feel those pains. You just do what you do, and then it's afterwards is when you feel it.
I was going to say, so, what is it like? I mean, you're obviously getting ready to go on tour. You must be really excited to get back on the stage. That's the life you chose for yourself. This has to be the time of that you're really looking forward to it, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we only ever made records and still only make music just to get out on stage.
Right.
You know, that's the way you play. That's the way you tour. That's it. That's how we've always looked at it. We just love being on stage and being on tour, and that's all we ever wanted to do.
Yeah. Well, that's cool. Well, we're going to see you here this week in Detroit coming up. And Of Mice and Men is going to be on that show as well with you here, eh?
Yeah, yeah. That's going to be cool.
Yeah, they got a couple dates here with you. Order of Decline came out this past summer. Good luck with that record. And, of course, playing Chuck in its entirety and all sorts of stuff. And have fun at Louder Than Life, man. I'm kind of jealous. I was there a couple years ago, and it's such a great festival. And I think the night you guys are there, if I'm not mistaken, I want to say Rob Zombie and stuff is going to be playing, right?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Have you seen his movie yet?
I have not, no.
Are you a horror movie guy?
I never have been, actually.
No.
I'm not really. No.
Yes.
I think I scare too easily or something. I don't know.
Hey, well, listen, Derek, really good talking to you. Maybe we'll see you here in Detroit, okay?
Okay, cool.
Hey, safe travels. Thanks for the time, my friend.
All right. Talk to you later.
Derek Whibley from Sum 41. Up next, it's Scott Gorham from Thin Lizzy and Black Star Riders. I'll talk about this a little bit later on, but I had a hell of a time getting him on the phone because of these international calls. And, well, his PR people gave me the wrong number. So, but anyways, we finally did make the connection. And I've never interviewed Scott before, but, man, what a great conversation this is with a legendary guitar player. So hope you guys dig this. It's Scott Gorham today on Talkin' Rock.
We've had a bit of a hard time with our landline lately.
So we've had to, you know, switch the numbers around and all that. So, yeah. So it's, you know, partly our fault.
But, well, yeah, they gave me the 07770, and then they said, did you drop the zero? And I'm like, no, I'll give that a shot, and here we are. How about that? It's a miracle.
Yeah. It's called an international phone call.
Right, exactly. Well, you sound great. You sound like you're in the next room, man. So we'll get this rolling here so you can get on with the business. But
thanks, man. Yeah, great, great. Let's do it.
Yeah, well, tell me about Another State of Grace. I mean, this is your fourth record, and I mean, the band keeps growing. You got different guys, and now tell me a little bit about the album.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I think this is absolutely the strongest effort to date. I know every band says that. What's your best album? The one we've just done, right? But we all really do believe that. You know, and like you said, there's two new guys in the band. Christian Martucci, who came out of the group Stone Sour. And we've got a new drummer, Chad Saliga. And, you know, sometimes these situations work and sometimes they don't. We bring in new guys and it's like, well, you know, it kind of works. But with the two boys here, it really did work. They you know, they brought in a little bit different sound, a new energy. So there's a lot to be said about bringing new blood into a band. You know, plus it's, you know, a new producer, Jay Rushton. Instead of, you know, doing, you know, as we did in the last two albums in Tennessee, we came back to Los Angeles with Jay and recorded it at Sphere Studios, which was just a beautiful studio. Mm-hmm. So the atmosphere was great in the studio. Ideas were flying. The jokes were flying. You know, we just had a great time. And I think you can actually tell on the album that this band, Black Star Riders, we had a good time making this album.
Yeah, you talked about Christian. Also, Jay's a friend of mine. We'll get to that here in a second. But Christian, cool. If I'm not mistaken, Christian he brought a little bit of a different vibe as far as the recording is concerned as well, and the songwriting, right?
Well, he did. He came up with this idea, and I have to admit, in the beginning, I was like, I don't know if this is going to work or not. But he said, you know, I did this on one of their albums, and it really came out great. So his idea was that, you know, he was going to be out on the road with Stone Sour, going to bring his Pro Tools with him. So I said, why don't you guys do this? Record all your ideas onto, you know, your iPad, your iPhone, whatever you got, and send it over to me, and I'll start putting all of these ideas together in song form. And what that's going to do is that's going to save us so much time when we get into rehearsals in Los Angeles. Because if you think about it, you know, we had, you know, 13 days to put together 15 songs. So to be able to do it this way, you know, with him putting I sent in 20 ideas and Ricky sent in 25 and Robbie Crane, the bass player, he sent in ideas to be able to mold these songs well in advance of us getting into the studio and then kind of working out, you know, little arrangements, you know, things that maybe niggled us a little bit. It just saved a ton of time. So, yeah, it was a great way to do it. I was really anti it in the beginning, but it actually worked out really well in the end.
Now, I've been in this business for 30 years, and you're pushing almost 50 as a professional musician and stuff. And it's like...
What, 50 years old?
Yeah,
50,
yeah.
You say 50 years
old? I'm pushing...
I love you. I'm going to hang out with you more often.
I've been in this business 30 years, and I've seen radio and everything grow exponentially and with technology and stuff. But how do you grasp onto the technology? Technology, being, I guess, an old school guy. I'm an old school guy as well. I got vinyl and all this stuff, and I'm not crazy about the technology. But what do you think?
Well, you know, what it's done is the new tech is it really has made things go a lot quicker in the studio. You know, the whole editing thing, EQs. If you understand the Pro Tools system, it really is almost like a flick of a button. It's why these kids can get in there. Back bedrooms and all that, and pretty much come up with a pretty decent sounding album because just coming out of the bedroom, right?
Yeah.
But because these things, it's made it so much quicker, so much easier, and a lot more inexpensive. move, you know, and that's kind of a big deal now. You know, the record deals for everybody have kind of plummeted. So you've got to save as much money as you can in a lot of different areas. And like I say, a lot of those areas where you eat some time is in rehearsal because you're paying for rooms and hotels and the whole thing. So anything that you can save, you're going to do it. So this system that Christian came up with was a real time and money saver at the same time. So great. We might even do it again on the next one.
Hey, by the way, Damon Johnson's a good friend of mine, and he wanted to know how your golf game was going. So that was his.
Actually, it's not too bad. It was my guitar was getting in the way of my golf swing, but yeah, I'm kind of you know my handicap's going a little bit, you know, down and down and down. So not great at all. I mean, we're all crap golfers, right? But it's basically it's fun again. So it's so cool. Hey, David, how are you, buddy? Hope everything's good.
Hey, say maybe for your next gig, you could become Alice Cooper's guitar player and golf all the time, just like Damon did. You see?
Well, Damon used to tell me about that. Yeah, Alice would wake him up at the crack of dawn. Boy, I would just be the grouchy bear at that point. You know.
So Jay Rustin texted me. He said that your ad-libbing of the guitar player parts in the studio is amazing. He says he'd play a bunch of solos, compile the best bits for an amazing solo. He says your rhythm hand is great. He's great straight from the 70s. Guitar players don't play like that anymore. Talk about the comments that Jay just made.
Well, I guess they're correct. I'm not sure. I mean, we all play just, you know, the way we play. I try not to analyze too much in what I do. I mean, I effectively think I'm a pretty dumb guitar player, really. I'm not schooled in any way, shape, or form. My whole thing is just we got to feel it out. So there's no real notation going on there, right?
Well, he says
I appreciate that.
No, he says a lot of the guitar players. He says a lot of the guitar players nowadays they all play with just straight, boring chugging with no swagger. Scott plays with straight chug, but then he adds an accent you'd never think of. His parts really add to the song. So that's
cool.
And that's cool praise coming from Jay because you know he's worked with a lot of guitar players. I mean, this text came back immediately, so that you know that was one of those things where that's his real vibe about how you play in the studio.
Oh, great. Well, I so appreciate that from Jay. I love Jay to death. You know, I didn't know really how, I guess none of us knew how it was going to work out with Jay. I mean, the first time I'd met Jay was the very first day of rehearsal. And really right from the first handshake on, I really like this guy. He's got such a great vibe to him. And he keeps that vibe going in the studio, which you really need that. Because, you know, when you're in the hot seat and the red button hits, you know, things can get kind of tense, right? But he's the guy. He's always on your side the whole time you're there. And I'd say if you get a little stuck, he's got an idea, right? And that's what a great general of the studio has to have. He has to have an idea. He's got to put a positive with a negative. And Jay is excellent in doing that. So he always had a joke. Right. And really, when he'd start to edit things together, you'd go, oh, my God, this guy's a genius. I love this guy to death. You know, so I think we absolutely will be working with Jay again. No doubt.
Yeah, that's awesome. Hey, tell me about the challenges. I mean, obviously, you guys are on your fourth record. You are a full-fledged, you know, band and everything. But tell me about the challenges of starting a new band after being with Thin Lizzy for decades.
Well, I didn't know how hard it was going to be. Yeah, sure, we'll start a new band, no problem. You know, I mean, you cruise along for years and years, and you got the brand name behind you, and you know, the audiences, they all know, you know, what songs you're going to be playing, and they know them all by heart. Now you start a new band, and nobody's ever heard of this thing. Nobody knows any of the songs. So it's rough going, you know, and you really have to have some thick skin to, you know, keep the whole thing going, knowing and believing, like, you know, I really believe in this thing. You know, we can't let it fold. We got to keep going. So I think that's the kind of attitude you have to have when you start something new like this. grow that thick skin and just forge forward, you know, because eventually and hopefully it'll come good for you.
Yeah, was it harder than you? I mean, obviously you said it's challenging and stuff, but did you think it was going to be as challenging? I mean, you know, you've been in this business for a long time.
Well, you know, I honestly, God, I didn't really know what to expect. I knew this was not going to be an easy road.
Right.
But there are spots where you go, oh, my God, I didn't know it was going to be this hard, you know. You know, gigging night after night after night rather than one gig, day off, one gig, day off. No, it's just nothing like that, you know. So you've got to have stamina. I get so many people saying, hey, Scotty, you know, at your age, why do you still want to do this, you know? And the one answer that I have for that is it's the people who are in the band that really make you want to keep going. These are really cool people to travel around the world with. They're great musicians. Everybody knows what they're doing. Everybody's got everybody's back. You trust everybody. And that makes the challenge a little less of a challenge because everybody feels safer up on stage because, like I say, everybody's got everybody's back. So that's a really cool. And I just love playing guitar. You know, I mean, who doesn't? It is the best job in the world. So there you go.
Hey, right from your mouth. There's no question about that. So you did play a couple gigs, though. What'd you do, four or five shows this year with Thin Lizzy?
Well, we did. You know, certain people wanted to turn this into a full blown tour. It was the 40th anniversary of the Black Rose album.
Right, right.
And it's been 30 years since Phil's passing. And you know, I wanted to do something to commemorate kind of both things at the same time, but I didn't want to turn this into a, hey, it's another career. Okay. You know, that wasn't going to happen. Sure, we could have gone out and made a ton of money and all that, but I just didn't feel that was the right thing to do. So what we did is we picked out four festivals, two in England, one in Spain, and one in Belgium, and we just left it at that. And the guys who came up on stage with us were great. It's Scott Travis from Judas Priest on drums, and Troy Sanders from Mastodon,
right? Yeah,
on bass, and it was kicking. I mean, and they're huge Lizzy fans, which really, really helps a lot, right? But they're great guys, great musicians, and we all just had a great time doing the four. But like I say, four is it, and now it's full. Full-time Black Star Riders.
Now, did I see, what's his name, Tom from Aerosmith join you guys on stage? Was that during this run during the summer?
Well, he did. Yeah, that was a year and a half ago.
Oh, that was that long ago. That. I wasn't sure when that was. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I saw that.
Hey,
yeah.
And the great thing about Tom, obviously coming out of Aerosmith, he's, you know, wrote these massive hits for Aerosmith. But in the same breath, it was the first time he'd ever got on stage with another band ever.
Oh, my God.
And he wanted to come out with us and try his hand with the Thin Lizzy things, which is not easy material to do. And he did great. You know, he flew through the stuff. He had a great time. You know, he brought his wife out on a few of the shows, and she's great. And it was just good to see Tom up there in a different situation having such a great time.
Yeah,
so very cool.
I didn't realize that. Yeah, you mentioned Scott Travis and stuff. I saw the pre-show with you guys here in Saxon, here in Detroit, last winter. I think it was March or something. Man, it was cold as hell outside. I remember that. But how'd that tour treat you?
It was great. You know, I've talked to so many people about that festival, and a lot of people had no idea who we were. But they kept going, wow, who's that band? You know, who's that? Who are those Black Star Rider guys? I really dig them.
Right, right.
And then we would end up playing a Lizzy song amongst the thing, and they'd go, oh, yeah, okay, I get it. I said, oh, that's who those guys are, you know. So it did us, I think it kind of got us out of the starting blocks a bit for America. It was a great tour. I think every show was pretty much, if it wasn't sold out, it sure as hell looked like it every night. You know, and Saxon was on the bill. I hear that Biff's not feeling real good right now, so I hope, just want to send some good wishes to Biff right now. Hope he gets better quicker. But yeah, it was a great tour. We all loved it. Hopefully, at some point down the road, we might do it again.
Now you said
that'd be cool.
Yeah, you said getting out of the starting blocks here in America. I mean, talk about what it would mean for success in America. Because I mean, Thin Lizzy never really got there that much. You know, a little bit here and there. Of course, you had a couple hits and stuff. And Black Star Riders, of course, is a fairly new band. So talk about success in America.
Right. Well, I was saying. With Thin Lizzy, we were great on the coast, all around America, on the coast. If you could see the water, we were golden, right?
Really?
Sold out shows. Yeah, but as soon as you started to go east or west and you started to lose the water, that's when we started to lose the fans, right? And I don't know what the significance of that actually is, right?
I'll tell you right now. Gene Simmons told me one time. He told me, if you can get the people in Chicago and Cleveland and Detroit, the rest of the country will follow. That's kind of what he told me.
Well, you know, that sounds about right. It sounds about, but doesn't Chicago have water too? The Great Lakes.
Well, the Great Lakes. But I'm thinking. I thought you were talking about
for anything here. You know.
Listen, you should have wrote Detroit Rock City. Then it would have been a huge hit.
No kidding. Well, yeah, you know, you're right. I mean, obviously, Lizzy back in that era. He was almost like the right band with probably the wrong sound at the right time. I don't know how,
right.
I don't know what the phrase is, right? But you know, we were in an era of Queen and Journey, Styx, all these bands that have fabulous production with huge block background harmony, vocal harmonies and all that, which is something we didn't have. We didn't go in for the big bombastic production and big vocal lines and all that. So I think that might have been maybe a little bit of the problem. But I talked to other people and I go, no, that's what we liked about you. So if I knew what to do, what made you big in America, boy, I'd bottle that thing and start selling it on the internet.
So it's funny because when you were a young kid and you were over in Europe and stuff, you were trying your hand at a guitar playing and stuff. And I read in your bio or something like that, that you were trying I guess your dad said he gave you 6 months or else you're going to have to come back and work for his business, is that true?
Right.
Yeah,
absolutely. That was like the challenge,
Yeah,
it's like, well, here's $400. Take your little hobby, go over to Europe and do what you got to do. And then as soon as your visa runs back, you're coming back here and you're working with me.
Well,
that scared the hell out of me.
Right. You didn't want to work for your dad. Yeah, right.
Well, it wasn't that. He was in construction, and all you guys out there that are in the construction business, you know how tough of a business that is. And I really didn't want to go, back in and, pumping nails and, sawing, 2x4s and all that, or laying tarmac. I wanted to go out and do what I honestly and truly loved to do, and that was, play music. And, thankfully, I literally had 30 more days to go on my visa in England, and I ended up getting this audition with Phil and the boys, and Phil called me up that night and asked me to join the band, and then problem solved. I don't have to go back.
And the rest is history. Well, it's funny because my father, when I grew up in Western New York, and my dad, when I came here to Detroit, he was kind of the opposite. He said, hey, give it 6 months and see what happens. So when I saw that on your bio, I'm like, our fathers were kind of similar in a certain kind of way.
Yeah, they like that 6 month thing. Huh?
I guess so. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And I also read. Did you or do you have a brother in law in Supertramp? You've probably heard this a billion times, but
sure. Yeah, his name is Bob Siebenberg. He plays drums with Supertramp, which was really one of the original reasons I flew to England, because there was a very remote, and I must stress the word remote, possibility that I might be able to join this new thing that he'd gotten into called Supertramp.
Wow.
but in fact, what had happened, it just took me too long to try to work up the money for a plane ticket. By the time I got there, they were already settled in, what they were going to be doing and how fabulous they actually turned out to be. But, something, it really, it was kind of a godsend. as much as I love Supertramp and the songwriting and all that, and all the success they had, it really was not a guitar band.
Right.
Where, you know, Thin Lizzy was, I was able to get in this band called Thin Lizzy and then, you know, start to learn a lot about my instrument to other guys that I ended up playing with. So it was really kind of a godsend that the Supertramp thing did not work out.
Yeah, I was just listening to Quietest Places this morning from Supertramp. I just love Supertramp. I don't know.
Quietest Moments.
Yeah, the Quietest Moments. Yeah, that's such a great record. But hey, a couple more things here, real fast. You just mentioned, you know, Biff isn't feeling very well. Did you know Rick Ocasek or Eddie Money? Did you ever cross paths with those guys?
You know, I didn't. Eddie Money actually was in our audience in the very early days, and he I remember him getting up and hands over the head applauding for one of the songs that we did and all that. I never met Rick Ocasek. I loved the Cars. I thought they were such a great band. They had a great sound, great hit records, albums. So it's always a shock. And you'll agree with me here, and everybody else will too. It's always a shock when you hear about these, you know, well-known people that you've kind of loved your whole life and really respected, and now they're not there any longer. It's a shock to the system. So I hope his family is okay. You know, I know they're probably not at this point, but I hope you are. I'm thinking about you. So. Yeah, I wish I did know him, but I didn't know anybody from the Cars.
So, final thing here for you. So, what's coming up in the future as far as Black Star Riders, like in the next year and a half or so?
Well, the immediate future is we go into rehearsal on October 3rd here in London. Then October 6th, our first show is in Bristol, which is it's kind of middle England. And then we've got 14 shows in the UK. Well, that includes, Scotland, Ireland, Wales also. And then we shove straight off to Europe for 7 weeks. And we're literally playing in every country in Europe. And hopefully, I mean, the idea, the master plan is people are now working on a plan to get us over to America so we can come over and see you guys and play for everybody in America.
Yeah, you're going to hop on. You trying to hop on a tour? Are you going to go it alone, or what do you think?
I think, you know, probably the best thing is, you know, hop on somebody's tour. Trying to do the club thing is a bit of a, you know, tougher road to take. So,
right.
Yeah, if we could find some friendly faces somewhere that'll hold our hands and drag us up on one of their tours, that'd be great.
Well, I'm so glad we made the contact because, like I said, it was getting frustrating with this international calling thing, but they sent me the wrong number, and now we made contact, and that's great. And Another State of Grace is out. It's awesome. Christian Martucci, by the way, I know a little bit from the Stone Sour guys and stuff, and he seems like a great guy, so I can't wait to hear all the stories about you touring with him and stuff. So
yeah, he is a great guy. I'm going to be calling him at around 8 o'clock this evening, so I'll say hi for you to him. Okay,
yeah, tell him Meltdown from Detroit said hello. And hey, Scott, all the best. Thanks so much for the time. Another State of Grace, like I said, killer stuff. I love the title track. It's got that Irish flair to it, and it grooves. There's no question about it.
Well, thank you so much. Well, you've got the right phone number now, so give me a call anytime.
I have it memorized practically. All right, Scott.
Well, write it down.
Hey, I appreciate the time. Good luck here with the new record and everything and the tour and the whole nine yards, and we'll see you when you're here in the States, okay?
All right, yeah, hope to see you over there. Thanks for everything.
Thanks, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, see you. Bye-bye.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Scott Gorham from Black Star Riders and Derek Whibley from Sum 41 today on the Talk and Rock with Meltdown Podcast. And that's a lot of rock right there.
It is
that's
a lot of rock. Yeah.
So, from two different eras, two different generations, we just combined them into one podcast, kind of like what we do.
Yes. Yeah. A couple different generations. And
that's right.
Combining, kicking, and screaming.
Definitely yes. Different talent levels.
Yeah.
Anyways, they got some cool stuff coming up here on the Rock News today. The guys from Foo Fighters are joined on stage by someone. Now, there's a shock because nobody usually joins Foo Fighters on stage.
I know. I think, you know, here's the thing, too, is like somebody joins Foo Fighters on stage, old hat, but it's who joins them that makes it just kind of a cool story.
Yeah, so we'll get into that here coming up in just a few minutes. I'm Meltdown. Al Beck is over there. He's got your rock news you can use or not. No follow-up questions, as always. Yeah, yeah, there you go. So, yeah, it was cool to talk to Scott Gorham. I've never talked to him before, but right at the very beginning of the conversation, I kind of alluded to this, that have you ever made an international phone call?
Outside of Canada, no.
No, right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I've,
not outside of North America.
Right, I have all sorts of Canadian numbers in my in my phone. But yeah, so what happened was I was trying this international calling thing to get Scott because he's over in Europe or Ireland or somewhere like that. And anyways, I tried calling and kept saying busy. And I did this for last week for one day.
Yeah,
and then I tried it again this week, same thing. And so what happened was... The his publicist or whatever, they sent me a number that had one extra zero.
Oh, jeez.
And I took that zero out right through.
Of course.
So, yeah.
And of course, he's on the other end going, God, what a dick. He's supposed to call me.
No, we had all sorts of issues that were, you know, and I, as a matter of fact, one of my friends, Jay Rustin, who I actually talked about in the interview with Scott, actually sent me his manager's number, say, get a hold of him. And I guess Scott doesn't like to make international calls, and I can see why, because it's kind of a pain in the ass.
Yeah, evidently, yeah.
So, anyway, so it was really cool to talk to him. Then Derek, that one just kind of came out of nowhere, and it was pretty cool to talk to him. Sum 41 starting up this big tour as we record this coming weekend at Louder Than Life. So, anyways, let's get on with the show here. We got rock news from Soundgarden and kind of a lot of it, speaking of which. So, fire away. What do you got first?
So, we had heard that there was going to be a Chris Cornell documentary, but we get a few more details on this documentary. It's going to be a little bit, in a way, sort of a hybrid, because there is going to be some dramatizations. So there are actors involved. Now, this is one thing also that I did not realize, that Brad Pitt is actually producing this this movie called Like a Stone, obviously after the Soundgarden name.
After the Audioslave,
yeah. That's right. And so the documentary is going to be featuring some archival footage of Chris Cornell, and they have announced an actor who will be playing Chris Cornell. It's a guy I am not familiar with. I don't think he's had very many big roles. His name is Lachlan McDonald. So he's going to be playing Cornell, and this is also kind of cool in the dramatization scenes. There is an actress announced to play Vicky Cornell, who is Drina De Niro, the adopted daughter of Robert De Niro, is going to be in this movie.
Really?
Yeah. Now, we are looking for a 2021 release, so still lots of work to be done on this Chris Cornell.
How do you spell Lachlan?
Oh, boy. It's L-A-U-C-H-L-I-N.
Oh, C-H. Okay, I got G-H because I'm looking in there. It's just like this old guy talking about McDonald's or something. I'm like, I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. Okay, now I'm trying to see what he looks like here. Let's see if he looks like Chris Cornell. Yeah, see all these pictures I got here with, you know, he has short hair and whatnot.
Yeah.
So we'll have to wait for, I don't know. This doesn't sound great. We'll see what happens.
No, we'll see.
I'm hoping for the best, preparing for the worst.
I mean, come on, produced by Brad Pitt. What could go wrong?
I heard his latest movie sucks. Yeah, did you see it?
No, I haven't. I don't mind Brad Pitt. I think he's actually a pretty good actor.
I got nothing against Brad Pitt.
No, I don't know how he is as a producer or anything. I mean, it's a name on a movie at this point. But
yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. You know, like I've seen this kind of stuff before. They got the actors and stuff, and they portray the rock stars. And I don't know if it's more like... what's the word I'm looking for? Distracting? Just not
sure.
I don't know. You know,
it's very Rescue 911.
Well, you know, like in Bohemian Rhapsody. Have you seen?
I'm going to watch it this weekend.
Okay, this weekend. Okay.
Yeah.
If you've tuned in or listened to the podcast before, he's been saying this for 6 months now. Have you seen The Dirt?
Yeah, that I did see. I saw that. That was immediately okay. I must use this as an excuse, but I think Bohemian Rhapsody is on HBO now, so I don't have an excuse.
Okay,
The Dirt. Was was immediately available when I went home. I could just pull up Netflix and watch it. So I did see it.
Right. It's streaming. I mean, you can just watch it.
But again, now I have access, streaming access to Bohemian Rhapsody. Still haven't seen it. But this weekend, I'll watch it.
There you go. I'm sure you will. So there'll be a test on Monday. So, but like Tommy Lee's character played by Machine Gun Kelly was awesome. The rest of them, I'm like, I don't know, man. It's like I've been around those guys enough. And of course, Motley is, there's pretty specific, you know, and I don't know. I just thought it was like it would, as far as the people playing the particular members of the band, I thought it was, but anyways, except for Tommy Lee.
Right.
But what else you got as far as Soundgarden's concerned?
So like I said, the documentary is coming out in 2021, but if you want to scratch that Soundgarden itch, there is actually a book, which is called Dark Black and Blue, The Soundgarden Story, which really covers the entire history of the band from before coming together to form the band all the way up to the untimely passing of Chris Cornell. Now, this book is actually already available, so if you want, you can go ahead and pick that up now.
Yeah, I think this week was the anniversary of Bad Motor Finger, which I think turned 28, if you can believe that. Dude, I can remember the first time I heard Outshine. I'd played it on the radio, and I'm like, this sounds like Black Sabbath, man, that big, crunchy riff.
Great, heavy riff,
yeah. And, you know, Chris Cornell comes in, and he's got a little bit, a higher-pitched voice and stuff. Yeah. It's awesome. So, great stuff. So, you got anything else in Soundgarden?
Yeah, one last thing I want to mention, as long as we're doing a whole Chris Cornell corner here, a Cornell corner.
Yeah.
One of the last things he recorded was a song, actually, with his daughter, Toni. They did it in a home studio. What was it called? A song called Faraway Places. Well, his daughter went ahead and released that on the internet. So if you would like to check out Chris Cornell teaming with his daughter, that is out there now.
Okay. All right. So let's move on to another record that celebrates its anniversary. This time around, it's 50 years.
Yes.
And we're talking about just as far as records go, iconic, legendary, classic. I don't even know.
You can say the same thing about the band, too.
Exactly. Well, obviously, it goes without saying. But so tell us about Abbey Road.
Abbey Road, obviously, turning 50, as you had mentioned. So they're going to be doing a reissue. I mean, obviously, there's been reissues before. Four of the Beatles' iconic album, but this is going to have various reissue versions. We're talking super deluxe editions with three CDs, including the remix album, outtakes, and more rough mixes included in that. But here's the cool thing. It's going to be released, depending when this gets posted up here, September 27th of this year. So the cool thing about that is the reissue of Abbey Road is being released 50 years and a day after the original.
I don't think it's released on 50 years. Why don't they just release it under 50 years?
Because things come out on Fridays now.
They can't bend the rules for the Beatles.
Right. Jeez. I know. But that is kind of cool, though, especially 50 years and a day later.
As far as I'm concerned, that record to me, the second side of that record might be one of the most perfect album sides ever. And that whole Golden Slumbers thing and in the end, it's like, it's just so like, it's a perfect album side.
Yeah.
It's probably one of my favorite Beatles records. Are you a Beatles fan at all?
I do love the Beatles.
Yeah. So where do you rank that one?
That one's classic, dude. It's right up there.
They're all classic. Yeah. But that one is like, to me, it's pretty perfect.
Yeah. It even has one of the most iconic album covers.
Yeah, of course.
How many people go and take that photo?
Yeah, right. Kid Rock posted a picture one time where he was walking across the street here in Detroit somewhere, and he was walking across. They had one of the crosswalk things, and he's, what do you call it, redneck Abbey Road.
I like that.
So, yeah, that record's awesome. If you're not, like, a Beatles fan, give that record a listen, because I'm not a huge fan of, like, the early stuff, the early 60s. The late 60s, starting like with Rubber Soul and stuff, and then they stopped touring and all this. I posted this thing on my Facebook and
the more drugs, the better you like the Beatles.
Exactly. I call it the drug induced Beatles. Yeah. But so anyways, I posted this thing on my social media the other day. First concert and last concert. One guy said his first concert was the Beatles. I'm like, wow.
Holy crap.
Yeah, really? Someone said their first concert was Elvis.
No, cool. No way.
Yeah. That's pretty cool. He died in 1977.
Sure.
So.
Yeah.
So anyways, if you get a chance, Abbey Road, 50 years later, what do I have to say about it?
Right, yeah.
That hasn't been said before. So wrapping things up here, what do we got?
All right, so yeah, we've talked about this so many times before. The Foo Fighters welcome somebody on stage. That happens all the time. Sometimes it's a guy in a wheelchair. It's always something really cool, right? And a lot of times Dave Grohl likes to invite a kid up on stage, you know? And this time he has an 8-year-old kid join him on stage, but there's a very special connection because this kid's father is also a guitarist. I won't say it yet.
All right, don't say it yet.
But it's a very famous guitarist.
Somebody's going to play guitar with
us. Yeah, it's, yeah.
And the kid come out, you can tell he's a guitarist's son because the kid can play.
Right. Guitarist, by the way, a friend of mine, not a big deal.
One of my favorite guitar players of all time.
Yeah.
All right, so the kid's walking out on stage. As you can hear the fans, see the kid now.
Yeah.
Hold on. I thought you were going to come out and help your kid with the guitar.
All right, Armando is actually Scott Ian from Anthrax. So yes. Scott comes out and listen to the thud of applause.
Armando is going to help him out
waves.
With the guitar just to make sure.
I honestly thought more people would recognize Scott Ian. Scott Ian's very recognizable.
He is, yeah.
Rock show.
I think,
like, there's a few people who are like, oh, my God, it's the dude from Anthrax. That's
exactly.
Cool. But there's just a few.
But he starts playing a...
You want to start this one?
Here he goes. He starts playing Everlong here. So, all right, good for him.
So little 8-year-old Revel Ian, Scott Ian's son, did join the Foo Fighters on stage, played Everlong, as we heard at the end of that video clip there. And the video did surface online. Scott Ian himself was the one who shared it and, of course, started it with There Goes My Hero. And he's making his dad proud. He's out there playing with his favorite son on stage in front of 40,000 people playing Everlong. So
yeah,
Scott Ian, very proud of his son. And the kid, obviously at 8 years old, already can play.
Yeah.
So, you know, good future ahead for him.
Meatloaf's grandson. Right? You know that?
I did not know.
Yeah. He's married to Meatloaf's daughter, Pearl.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
So... Yeah. So anyways, no, but, you know, Scott's one of these guys where he's super recognizable.
Yeah.
But sometimes I think, like, for there, like, people may not put it together.
Right.
Like, I know that dude. I know that guy, you know?
When he walked out at first, there was less applause than when he sort of left. And it was sort of like, I think it hit people, or maybe they looked up on the screen and went, holy crap, because he's got that beard. I mean, it's so...
He's so recognizable.
So recognizable.
He's a good guy, too. So that's pretty cool, man. That's awesome stuff. So,
and Anthrax, one of my tops. I love Anthrax.
Yeah. You know, you weren't here when Frank Bello came in, or you were working or something, right?
You know what? I think maybe you did bring him in to the studio. I think it was one of those, like, hey, you introduced me, and I was in the middle of something, and it was like a, hello, nice to meet you, and that was all we had time for.
Okay.
Yeah,
I remember that. All right, give your socials there, brother.
Al Beck Radio, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
All right, at Meltdown WRIF. Hey, got a bunch of interviews lined up for next week, none that I've done so far. Actually, I've done one. Johnny Z, he's got this book that's coming out. He was the guy who started Megaforce Records back in the early 80s, and I don't know if he actually discovered Metallica, but he signed Metallica.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, then of course, as they say, the rest is history. So I talked to him. Pretty cool interview. He's got a lot of cool stories and just seems like a really good guy. So anyways, that's coming up. I do have some rock bands that are out there touring. I got one who's actually doing a residency coming up here, so we'll get into that. And also, I'm supposed to talk with Tom Kiefer coming up, and I mean, I'll get to talk to Tom. He's awesome. But the new record from Tom Kiefer is killer. I got one complaint. It's too short.
Oh, sure.
It seems like when I just start getting into it, it's over, you know?
Yeah.
But it's really good, man. I love it a lot. So, and of course, you know, I really like Tom, so I guess he can do no wrong in my eyes. But anyways, we'll be talking to Tom coming up here as well. So if you get a chance, subscribe. And, of course, check back often. We'll talk to you guys again next time. Thanks so much for checking out Talkin' Rock.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.